Okay, Miranda, would you mind again calling the meeting to order?
Call the meeting to order at 10 a.m.
Okay. Miranda Shake?
Here.
Amy Byers? Janet Claire? Esther Curry?
Here.
Betsy Mahoney? Jill Pfeiffer?
Here.
And Diane Yeoman?
Here.
Okay. And the approval of minutes from the March 16th meeting, I know we had a correction that the time was wrong. It was listed as 11 a.m., but it should be 10 a.m. Would anybody like to make a motion to approve those corrected minutes?
This is Esther. I'll make the motion to approve the minutes as corrected.
And this is Jill, and I will second it.
Okay, we do need to do a roll call vote for any motions with this new digital process. Miranda?
Yes.
Esther?
Yes.
Jill?
Yes.
Diane?
Let me ask a quick question. Can I say yes if I was not at the last meeting? Or should I just abstain?
That is a very good question.
Diane, I have this all the time, and there have been times when I've just abstained because I'm like, I wasn't there. I don't know.
I mean, I believe that the minutes are correct if you guys say they are, but I wasn't there to really verify it. So I will abstain.
Okay. I will research that because the reason is that makes perfect sense. The reason I'm hesitating is if we are in a committee that does not have a full group and we are just meeting quorum like we are today, it has to be a majority of the quorum. Mm-hmm. And so if we have people that abstain because they weren't at the last meeting, we might not be able to approve minutes. And so, but I don't know the answer to your question, so I will find out. And if that's the case, then we would have to just take it to the next meeting. And so I'll research the legalities of that.
Well, what if Diane just said present? Because isn't present a yes in the counting world?
I am honestly not sure, Jill.
Honestly, Cassandra, I think even if I abstain, there are four of us who have the right to vote, and three have said yes, that is a majority of the quorum.
Yeah, the reason I want to research that specifically, though, just for future reference. Okay. To make sure, because if two of you abstained because you weren't at the last meeting, that we would not have a majority. So I will research that and get back to everybody. So that's okay. Just a point of interest that I should definitely know about.
Okay, check on the present, because I for some reason I thought if somebody voted present, it in the count it voted as a yes. But check on that too. I could be wrong.
Okay. So I do have some updates for you. The first that I wanted to go over is the Rails working group for their sustainability for their LSAPs. I don't know if you all have seen this, but there was an announcement that Dee is set to retire in November, the executive director with Rails. And so I'm sure that that is going to change some of their thought process on this project. I do know that they had sent it out for a consultant, but I'm not sure that they are going to continue in that direction. And so what we are going to do, we've already submitted a proposal of what it would look like if RSA libraries were to come in based on the existing share model. And so that has been submitted to them. And so we're really going to let them determine what's going to be best for them. And so we will be ready to mobilize if there is an interest in some additional membership for RSA members. But otherwise, we are, I think, we're just at a holding spot for that. So we're going to put a pin in that. The share annual agreements have been sent, and I got an amazing response this year. Sometimes it's really hard to get people to send those back, but we had an option to sign electronically, which was just through a Microsoft form, and it worked beautifully. I think just making it as easy as possible for people to sign off on their agreements is really a good way to do it. We also just have an update for the Carly Project. I can't remember if we discussed this at our last budget review meeting, but the State Library has stated that they will continue funding the Carly Cleanup Project in fiscal year 2023. So our three database cleanup catalogers for that project, they were temporary workers, but we are going to continue their contract into this next fiscal year, which was wonderful. I did have just an update with Aspen and Vega. That has been under the purview of the Circulation Committee for review. And we are going to be discussing that. I do know that I have been getting a lot of feedback from our libraries that, you know, the concerns with additional fees and census changes and minimum wage. And so I'm not sure how much support for membership that we would get if we were to pursue this. So I'm thinking that what I would like to do is just review this again with the Circulation Committee. If they have a preference for one over the other, then we could take it out to members for a demo. And would this be something you're interested in? And if we can't get people to even respond to the survey or give us a clear yes or no, I think that'll have, that will be telling. If that's the case, I do know that Polaris has the Vega product that we could implement with individual libraries. I don't like doing that because it's always better to use the power of a group to get the better pricing, to get the better service for everybody. But if we can't get the support, I don't necessarily want to spend a year trying to promote a product that is never going to get the traction it needs. So I think that that's my plan for that piece moving forward. Does anybody have any questions about that? Okay. An update on the Share Mobile Library. We are in the process of getting self-check implemented. We don't have anybody from Decatur here. Unfortunately, in that process, it accidentally went live for Decatur patrons. We thought it was going to be in their beta app. Yeah, it was a really bad day on Monday. And so we got that fixed. It's been disabled. We think we're going to start it on July 1. And with that, they will have the RFID as well. So we're working on a little video that Decatur patrons can have to see how it works. With the added layer of RFID, it takes a little bit longer because it's got to actually check it out and tag that RFID to disable it. So we'll have some instructions for them, but also for any other library who's just doing the self-check, there'll be a video so you can kind of see how it works. And so again, the anticipated date is going to be July 1 for that launch. We also, one of our biggest requests for the mobile app has been to have a filter by library. And we've taken that to Solis and they explained that there's a setting in Polaris that is an API that is for end or third-party developers to be able to use it. And that needed to be developed on the Polaris end. And so I know that there were several people, several different consortia that had requested that. And so we anticipate that they're going to release that in an upcoming release. So it's coming. It's obviously not as quickly, it comes as quickly as we'd like, but we will encourage Solis as soon as that is available on the Polaris end that'll be our number one priority to get that. I know there's a couple other similar requests that are affiliated with that Polaris API. So hopefully we'll be able to address some of those once we have those completed. I have really great news. Our Northwestern Elementary School has finally gone live. They were kind of one of our holdouts that we kind of went much longer than the three-year transitional. Melvin Public Library has also planning to go live soon within probably the next week or so. And Dina, I think, said that they get the award for quickest transition. They've done it within a year. So we're really thrilled that they're ready to come on. Just an update for the Collection HQ DEI analysis tool. We've only had one library that has chosen to participate. So I think I'm going to go back to Baker and Taylor and just ask them to work with that library directly. Unfortunately, we just, again, just did not have the traction, but I think the library that wants it and is willing to pay that price will ask them to just honor that price and work with them directly. We also, at the SHARE Bibliographic Standards Committee, we had a discussion about diversity and inclusion. And one of the questions was in regards to searching the pack, if we had the capability to search in alternative languages. So it's, and I'm sure it's using some type of translation tool. Right now, we already have that capability for Spanish, but we don't have any other languages. When I reached out just for further exploration on that to our Polaris representative, it was a $23,000 implementation fee per language. Yeah. So just to do the due diligence, we had one of our new staff members, our new cataloger, actually do some research for us. And so to see, is there a need for, do we have a significant population that might need that type of service? And so the findings were that the next highest language group is just considered other Indo-European with no further specificity. But 76% of those speakers reported that they spoke English very well. The third group was Chinese. And so there were just a little over 10,000 speakers, but only about 60% of those spoke English, considered that they spoke English very well. I don't know that that's something that we can support being so small of a population in comparison. But if that's something that you would like me to pursue, I certainly would be happy to do that. And we could put it on the agenda for the next meeting for a further discussion of the topic. Is that something that you would like me to maybe take to our member libraries for maybe a survey? Or at that $23,000 price tag, is that something we just feel like that is not something we can support right now?
Cassandra, has any of our libraries approached you saying that they have a problem? Yeah, then I probably wouldn't invest in it.
Okay, then I will not, I'll not plan on continue pursuing that. And the SHARE budget, it's still in review with the IHLS Finance Committee, and we'll be going to the full trustees this month. Rhonda, I'm correct in saying that, right? Just to clarify.
Yes, they have reviewed it at the Finance Committee meeting and passed that on to the full board review, which will be actually next Tuesday. So the full board will review it then and vote on it to pass. And if it's passed, we'll include that into our system Mary McCaffrey grant application.
And I don't believe that there were any significant changes to the budget that was proposed back in April as to where we are now, Rhonda, is that correct?
It's a SHARE budget.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
I'm sorry, no changes to the SHARE budget as it was presented to the Executive and Finance and Policy Committees.
Okay, thank you, Rhonda. I appreciate it. Okay, one of the next, I'm so sorry, I have a ton of updates for you guys today. We have experienced some issues with text message notifications that have been going out in the middle of the night for AT&T customers. I don't know if any of your libraries have been affected by this, but it's definitely not something that I would want to get a text message at 3 a.m. regarding my hold notification. And so what's happening is our system processes them 4 times per day and sends it to the carrier. The carrier then determines when it will be sent out. And so AT&T, for whatever reason, seems to go in these cycles of sending them out overnight, which is really unfortunate. And so it's the type of texting that we are doing through the Polaris system. And there is an alternative called SMS texting, but it usually has to go through a third-party vendor. So Troy is exploring that. And there will be an additional cost I don't know. I think it's something that we might be able to absorb into our existing budget, but we're still going to do some additional investigation on that. And so as soon as I have more information, I will be sure to share that with you. And then last but not least, the McNaughton program has been advertised. We are going to send out another advertisement this month. And so far, I've only got 4 libraries that have signed up, which I am surprised. I thought we would have a lot more participation. And so I just wanted to bring that to the committee to see if you have heard any feedback, you had any theories, that, you know, suggestions of if why it may not have been so popular. The only thing I can think is, you know, when you do what you've done to do something different is a lot of work to transition into something as an implementation. So I just wanted to bring it to committee to see if you all had heard anything, had any feedback about the program.
Well, we had looked at it, and I think for our library, we have such a large list of standing order with our Ingram, that not knowing what you're going to get. And I think it was just the kind of the randomness of it, and don't like random. So, yeah. You know, we didn't, you know, have to wonder, are we going to get it from both Ingram and Naughton? And then what do we do from there? I think that for us was the biggest thing. And, you know, it was just, you know, we're already doing this and we're not, you know, and it fits our needs for what we do.
Yeah. So although it's automated for the selection, you will get the list of books that you'll be receiving, right. But it's just in the selection process for the others.
But it's following up on that list. I get a list. I do Junior Library Guild. And every so often I end up with duplicates because I don't get to the list and check and go, oh, I've already ordered that. So it's just kind of, you know, and for us, extra books, we are just so tight on space that, you know, we don't order duplicates of anything. And so we try and avoid that as much as possible because we're weeding like crazy just to keep space for the new stuff. So,
yeah, that's very helpful, Esther. Thank you very much.
I'm one of those 4 libraries that did sign up for it. And I guess for me, I was just looking at it as, oh, these will just be some titles I'll have 2 copies of for a while. And then, you know, I'll get rid of them. Like, I liked the idea that it was only going to temporarily take up space. And in a way, in theory, it shouldn't, because if it's a bestseller and it's popular, then it technically should be checked out, you know, frequently, you know, like and that's sort of where I am with it. Like, I don't know if I'll continue it next year because I need to see what it is we get, you know, see what those titles are and feel like, okay, those would be things that it was helpful to have 2 copies of for maybe the first 3 or 4 months. And then, you know, I sent them back because my intention is not to move them into out of my new book section and into my regular collection, because that's where we lack space. So like whenever we do that rotation from new to like just the regular fiction and not the new fiction, then in my brain, like I'll be sending back that McNaughton title. Cause I don't like, I'm like Esther. It's like, I need a preserve space too. So I guess I went into it with this mindset of, in theory, these shouldn't be sitting around, because if it's done correctly, you know what I mean? If the titles are, you know, picked using the metric of, you know, what's popular and, you know, what's going out, then in theory, it should just be checked out by a patron. So I don't know. It was more of a, you know, I guess I always default. It's like this non-resident fee waiver. I default to, let's try it for a year and let's see how impactful it is. And if it's super impactful and it's very negative, then we can pull it back. You know what I mean? Instead of defaulting, and I'm not saying this about you, Esther, but you know, instead of saying like, this is going to be a problem, even though I've not tried it, I tend with most of my decisions at my library to be like, I don't know, let's see, you know? So.
Well, and Jill, I might pick on you a little bit to see if you and the other 3 participants might be interested in doing a chat, maybe sometime in the fall, how's it going? And is it working? And how, you know, how effective is it? How many CERCs have you gotten in addition to what, you know, on those titles? And so, yeah, maybe we can just as be the early adopters and then see people see how it works for other libraries. They might be interested in adding that service.
Yeah. And what are the other three libraries? Just for now.
Rend Lake, Germantown, which they are already McNaughton customers. They were on a grandfathered plan that you can't get anymore. And the $5 a month plan is still smaller than the plan that they are grandfathered in at. So they were really excited to be able to add that without having to go to a new larger plan. Mm-hmm. And then Centralia.
Okay. That's interesting that like none of the Metro East libraries chose to participate.
I'm participating in MEPL tomorrow, so I'm going to be talking about it. And so yeah. Just to remind people that it's available because it's new. And so it might have got overlooked or, hey, I'm going to research that later. And so just it's sometimes just a matter of gaining momentum too.
Right. Because I agree with what Esther said. Like there would be no way that I would want to leverage what Ingram is sending me versus what I'm getting from McNaughton and trying to keep up with that and trying to cancel ones to, you know, because I'm getting it from another. Like that's way too time consuming in my life. So I really just viewed it as in addition to what I'm already getting from Ingram on my standing order plans. And remind me, I know I should know the answer to this, but what was the cost for the smallest plan?
It's about $21 per book. So I think it was 2000. Ooh, let me get you the exact number.
Which I mean, even $21, like that's less of a discount than you're getting at Ingram, which, you know, if people, again, if you're looking at it with that mindset, it doesn't make sense, you know, because it's like, well, I'm getting this cheaper from Ingram anyway. So it really has to be, you know, more of a, this is in addition to what I'm already getting to help an initial holds list. Or those people who browse, you know, like I have a lot of browsers for some reason in Fairview Heights. You can beg them to put their name on a wait list and they'll just be like, nah, just come in and get it, you know, and you're like, but it's never here, you know?
And that's, you know, we've sometimes seen those happy day collections that have, you know, limited renewals and things like that. And so that's certainly something that we could work with a library if they wanted to bring it in specifically as kind of a happy day collection for their browsers. That's mm-hmm. something that maybe that's I can kind of advertise it as that too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I do have the pricing here. It's for $5 a month, which is 60 books per year. The plan costs $1,252.80. And then the large plan is the 10 books at $2,505.60.
Yeah. So for me, I looked at it big picture. Okay. 60 books, $1,000 in a year. Yes, that's fine. I can work that into my budget to see if it's useful or not.
Yeah.
Do these books go anywhere or not? I do have a quick question. Are you going to send an email out like when you get that first batch so we kind of know to expect them?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll be sending all of the information as soon as those first selections have been made.
Okay.
Yep. Does anybody else have any feedback that they've heard? Okay. So that's all that I had. I'm going to go ahead for the share updates for my end. I do want to go ahead and turn it over to Jennifer.
Hey everyone, just a few updates from Bibb Services. We are having some personnel changes. Effective the end of this month, Edie will be retiring. She'll be out of the office and unavailable. Her final retirement date is mid-June, but she'll be taking vacation. And then on a personal note, I will be going on maternity leave anytime in the next 5 weeks. Thank you. So because of both of these, we've hired two new catalogers. Josh Zink, is our new cataloger 3. He is taking over a lot of Edie's responsibilities. And she is working very closely with him right now to make sure everything goes smoothly through the transition. And then we have a new cataloger 1, and we are getting her up and running. She actually just graduated from U of I this past weekend. So while I'm out, Josh will be the person to contact if you have any Bibb Services questions or cataloging questions.
Hey, Josh, I know you're on. Oh, no, Josh is not on this call, is he?
He is not. Nope.
Okay. I need his email address because sure. As you know, Edie had a kind of unique relationship with my library when it came to cataloging. And yeah. So I just need to talk to somebody about some specifics, and it might as well just be him if you're gonna, you know.
Yep. Feel free to CC me if you like. Otherwise, I put his email in the chat for you.
Perfect. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Not a problem.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer. Dina, did you have anything else that I missed?
Nothing that I can think of, and I couldn't figure out why my camera wasn't working, but my computer is closed. So there's that problem. It's just that type of day for me. But nothing that I can think of is coming to mind. You did mention the texting problems that we've encountered with AT&T, and I think T-Mobile or Sprint is wrapped up in that as well. But we are working on a solution, and hopefully we can come up with something that's going to work for everyone and most importantly, be cost effective. That's always a factor. But other than that, I think everything is good.
All right. Thank you so much, Dina.
Thank you.
Okay. So we can go ahead and move on to old business. The first thing I have on our agenda is the Share Affiliate Program. And we had discussed that at the last meeting in regards to the existing affiliates, which are required by the state library, that they are the libraries that do not have an automation system. The idea was an expansion of that program to make it just a little bit easier for our libraries to send out interlibrary loan with other IHLS libraries. And so you had asked me to do some research. Right now, we have about a dozen public libraries that do not participate, which are on the two ends of the spectrum. Either they're very, very tiny or they're very large, like Champaign-Urbana, Litchfield, Springfield. And so those are a very small segment of the standalones for IHLS. For the school libraries, we have about 120 that are standalone or using a different software. And with those, we have actually heard from quite a few of those libraries wanting service. They just can't necessarily get it through their administration. And so we're working on grant opportunities, funding opportunities. I actually talked to Derek Bleda, which he is our the lobbyist for ILA. I was on a call with him for something different. And I said, hey, you know, if you ever hear of any appropriations, so I'll follow up back with him in the fall when it's closer to their legislative session time to, again, reach out to let him know, hey, we are always looking for funding to bring in more libraries. And so that being said, I was really hoping that an expansion of that program to IHLS member libraries would encourage membership in SHARE, but also make it easier to send out those interlibrary loans rather than having to do the ALA fax request form. If someone gets those, they're not sure what to do with it. But I do understand, you know, you're asking the group to subsidize other libraries that are not choosing to pay for it. The only thing, it would only be interlibrary loan. So it would not be the automation software, the cataloging, the kit and caboodle, all of the other exclusive programs that we have. It would just be to facilitate the lending. And so I just wanted to bring that up again and see if anybody had any additional questions or if you've had a chance to think about it.
Sandra, I really believe in these times where costs just keep rising. I think it's a very difficult thing, even though you want to help others, they also have to learn how to help themselves. It is their choice to be a standalone, just like we have chosen to join SHARE. And I don't ever want to get to a point, and I know this happened way back at the beginning when we first started this process, if you give them too much, they have no reason to join. Mm-hmm. And yet SHARE bears the burden of the cost. And when you're talking about, because when I read the minutes, you looked at bringing on two more employees, those costs are going to rise anyway. So, I mean, I hesitate to say, sure, let's just take on more.
To clarify one thing, so would we be, You say just for lending, would we be adding their collection into? No. So would it be just like giving them a library card so they can get in to share? I mean, how, I guess, I mean, I'm on both fences on this, you know, because I also, like, from your earlier statements about costs and not pursuing things like Aspen and Vega, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, and everybody's minimum wage is going up. And then of course, cost of living's going up. And I'm sure all our libraries are not getting 5% and 6% raises to keep track with what the inflation costs are, you know? So then we're gonna say, like, we're gonna add, you know, potentially 132 libraries who now have access to share.
So the way that the affiliate program works now is that they are given a library card and they become a patron of IHLS, and all of their items are checked out for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so then that's sent to them for their patrons. When we have done that, we have found that there have been several of those affiliates who have then become share members. And so I do see it as, absolutely, Diana, get what you're saying of, you know, we're going to give them something and they're not going to have any reason to then join share. But I think that it's kind of a, you know, kind of like a free trial. And then you realize it's really great and you want to continue with better service for your students. Another piece of it is we could certainly limit it to just school libraries. That's an option as well, because it's a lot easier for a library director that has full decision-making capability of their budget than it is for a school library who has to go through several layers of red tape to get to an administration. That being said, it would not be adding their collections, Jill. It would specifically be to facilitate lending from share. So that if you've got your library, let's say that you got an ALA fax request form for interlibrary loan from somebody who doesn't do OCLC and doesn't do, isn't part of share. You're like, what do I do with this? Staff are confused. They don't know how to process those. They don't know what to do. We've even had some of our share libraries refuse to send them because they don't know that they're supposed to. That's part of membership for IHLS. And so I do see it as a facilitation of that lending, but it does not go both ways. It's coming from share. It's not coming from their schools back into share. So that's another layer to it.
So let me throw up this thought, just thinking off the top of my head. So let's just say we're looking at 120 school libraries. Would it be possible to think about scaling it, like, let's say 40 libraries a year, so it's not all 120 at once, and then they get it for a year, and then if at the end of that year, or maybe it's 2 years, I don't know, and at the end of that sort of trial, whatever, then it would be rescinded, you know, because then they would have, like you said, had the opportunity to try it, you know, decide how impactful it is at their schools. They would be responsible for keeping metrics to show to their administration, like, look, we got into this, you know, this is how much it was used, you know, I think, you know, it's time, you know, for us to become a member, you know, we were only given access to this for a year or year and a half or whatever it is we decide. And then at the end of that, if they can't prove to their administration that this is worth their dollars, you know, then it's rescinded. I don't, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm trying to find like a happy medium. I don't know if that's it.
I wonder if we had, rather than trying to limit it to a specific number, I wonder if we had some type of application program that they could apply for affiliate membership. And then we would make, just like the process that I told you about, of giving the library access to the share database. So it wouldn't be their students or their patrons. It would be specifically the librarian who could request those items in the share database. We could specifically reach out to the libraries that have contacted us inquiring about membership, that have been interested in membership in the past, and then just open it up as like an application process. You could apply. And then from there, we would offer you however long access. So then you could kind of test us out. On another note, I have been made aware that the the main product that a lot of our school libraries are using is through Follett, that there's a lot of dissatisfaction with Follett with our school libraries right now. I do have scheduled to actually go to a teachers networking group in December. And I know that's kind of far away, but they're trying to plan for summer and then, you know, return to school. So they put me in December to do a demo because they're looking at alternatives. So we have, I think we have a really good opportunity right now for schools. And again, that's why I'm going to be aggressively pursuing funding to bring in more schools this next fiscal year.
Okay. So then playing off what you said, because like to me, the linchpin in giving them access for a specific amount of time, the most important part of that is that they're keeping a metric to show their administration how it was used, you know, if it was used, you know, that type of thing. Because so I'm wondering if in an application process, or if you want to call it a grant or a something, a scholarship, I don't know, like part of that might be that they have to keep these numbers so that we know they're collecting the data that they can hand to their administration. And then, but to take that one step further, I think that that data should be determined by other school libraries. So like, let's say a small committee of school libraries who know the type of data you would pull from Polaris that would be important to show your administration to prove to them that it was used and used a lot or a little, depending on what the data shows. So that we know that these small libraries know what it is they're looking for and what's important. Because I mean, I could see where maybe they don't, you know what I mean? If you're in a really small community and you're not used to, you know, big library world and all the metrics and all the data, you may not know exactly what it is you're looking for and what you want to report. So let's lean on the bigger school libraries who know this and kind of set up like a template for them of the important information they want to collect every month so that they can turn around and show it to their administration. I don't know.
Again, and we could totally set that up on our end to email those reports at the end of a specific time frame. Certainly.
Yeah. So and maybe, I would like feedback from everybody else too. You can hate this idea. I don't know.
Yeah. I like the idea of at least at this point focusing on the schools since they make up a big chunk of the libraries we're talking about. And like I know our district, school district here, the high school is part of SHARE, but the K through eight is not. And I never could figure out why, but you know, it's one of those that I think they'd like to, but it's the administration. And so their hands are tied because, you know, they're stuck with what they're told to do. So I see that's frustration for the schools and I also know that some of our outlying township schools in our district have, you know, literally have their library lining the hallway between classrooms, you know, and have next to nothing. And they rely on whatever the teachers might have. And so, you know, I think about those type of schools too that have very little library wise that, you know, they really need that extra support, even though they are using something that's kind of, like I said, beyond their choice. So I think, and it's not something with school, you know, about to be out. It's something that, you know, we wouldn't implement until the fall anyway at this point. So, you know, it's worth maybe fine tuning the dynamics of how we're going to do it in the meantime, but, you know, definitely look at doing that.
So I really like this idea that Jill has proposed too, of maybe having it a 2-year program, 1 year for evaluation, the second year to try to transition into a full transitional member. And if you'd like, because we don't have a full group here today, definitely want to bring it to the full committee before making a decision. So maybe fine tune a proposal and have it for everybody at our next meeting.
That sounds good.
I think too, Cassandra, you have to remember, especially with these smaller areas, it's not necessarily always about the money that it costs to join SHARE. For them, they look at how much time and money is it going to take us to enter our collection to join share?
That has been
overwhelming to them.
That has definitely been something that we have gotten feedback from one library that she had had to transition twice in a very short amount of time, and she didn't want to do it again. But again, with, you know, some issues with Follett and Destiny, she's trying to be proactive at what's next. So,
I think if we can offer them the opportunity, but I think they do have to realize, like, I would be open to if we said a year or 2 years and you either join or you don't, because I don't want to give them access to where life is easier for them and harder for all of the share members, because it is share members that pick up the cost of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it will be an easier conversation with our membership to say that, like, you know, this is the happy medium between giving you everything for nothing and giving you something with sort of a finite line, you know, of, you know, join or don't join. And also tracking data, because I mean, the other thing is like, if a school library is really using it and they have their data to show the administration and their administration says no, well, then that's just information that can be shared with the community. You know what I mean? You know, like, your school had a library for 2 years, it was used a lot, and your administration, you know, your school board wouldn't vote to join. You know what I mean? Like that,
right.
That just makes them look bad because the school showed that it was useful, you know. But conversely, if there's a school library that's barely using it, then I'm like, well, okay, then let's not give it to them for free, you know?
Right. Yeah. Which I think that's a really good point, because if we ask people to apply with the expectation that you're going to, for potential membership, future membership, I think that we're going to get the librarians and the teachers who are wanting to make a change happen, that are going to put in the elbow grease to make it work.
Right. And I don't want to scare them off with the data or the metrics. I mean, I get it. Again, when you're really small, you don't have time to do all, you know what I mean? Do all of that. And, you know, so it's great if on the share end, you guys can set up a system in a way of, you know, the numbers that the administration is going to look at and be giving it to them monthly and sort of helping them, you know, like, go, this is how you want to organize this, and this is what you want to present. Like, I'm thinking other bigger school libraries, again, should be able to come in and be really helpful with this. So not to add work to you, Cassandra, or any of your staff, but like, let's draw on like those big school libraries to help these smaller school libraries maybe make this a success.
Yeah.
And on a personal note, I can tell you, having school libraries as well as a public library, if your incentive is to do it for your community, to make it a better place, you are willing to put in the time. Mm-hmm. We converted all of our school libraries to being cataloged and all that, and that was all done on personal time. So if you really want it for your community, and I realize some people don't have the time, but we can't just assume that everyone doesn't have time.
Right.
You have to make them want it as much as you want to have them.
Right. Yeah. Well, then I will be happy to pull together a proposal and then send it out to the group in advance of our next meeting, and then we can fine tune it. I think that any type of a program of this scale, it needs to go out to members for vote, with the clarification of what it is, what it's not, you know, that it's not going to be entering all their catalog. It's just going to be interlibrary loan facilitation. But then also with the intention to expand share and to expand our reach and expand our membership. So, okay. Well, then I will work on that again in advance of our next meeting, and then we'll just table this until then.
Cassandra, can I throw out one other thing in that too? Like, sure. Of these 120 school libraries, it also would be good to pinpoint the public libraries that are in those areas. You know, like, for example, I think in Fairview Heights, both of my school districts probably aren't in share. So then maybe it's contingent upon me to communicate with those principals, you know, like, hey, who is your staff who would handle this? You know, this might be something worth trying, you know, kind of explaining what the program is and how it's going to function for them for the course of a year or 2 years or whatever. But so just to reach out to those public libraries associated with those school libraries so they can maybe go have a conversation with those schools in their community about the program. Because it would be really easy for, like, for example, if you're a library that doesn't have a librarian, like I know one of my school districts doesn't, who's that going to? What teacher is that? Is that just sort of an email they go, later, you know? Right. Don't have time to think about that now. And then I can come in and be like, hey, I think you got an email about da da da, you know?
Right. Okay. Okay. All right. Does anybody have any other comments about that before we move on? Okay. Next, do we have any other old business to discuss? Okay, then I will go ahead and turn it over to Rhonda for our financial statement review.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to go over the financial statements that Cassandra sent the other day to you all via email. These are for statements and activities ending April 30th, 2022. And the statement of revenue and expenditures, there, I just want to highlight a few things. So as far as on the revenue, the total fees that we have billed out so far for fiscal year 2022 was $1,428,732.64. So that's 97.5% of that projected budget. Those fees include the share membership fees, the BIP services fees, like additional modules. Those type of fees are included in that budgeted number and what we've billed out so far. So we still have some monthly fees to bill. We have some quarterly BIP services to bill. So it'll continue to go up some before the end of the fiscal year is reported. And so out of that amount, we have collected 99.1% of that amount. So that's really great as far as our collections go. And on the expenditure side, the year-to-date actuals are below year-to-date budget by 5.9%. So we're staying well under budget with the expenses. And then on the, as you see, the one column for the IHLS approved FY2022 total budget remaining percentage, those benchmark ideal percentages should be 17% for personnel and 17% for all expenses except for personnel. Personnel should be 15%. So everything that is under that amount is highlighted with an explanation below. So there's about three different categories that are below those percentages where we'd like them to be. So there's some reasonings or what's included in those expenses below. And sometimes it's just the timing. Sometimes, you know, on the contractual services, it's because we pay a lot of those large bills up front. So it's kind of a monthly percentage that's laid out. So it might just be the timing of that. The others are, the percentage looks kind of frightening, 517.03 on the few for the vehicle expense and 72.77, but they're very small in dollar amounts. So unfortunately, we didn't budget enough for those, but the dollar variance is not that much. So it's not, too concerning for us. And another thing I wanted to point out is that IHLS has not made its contribution amount. We are still waiting for one last portion of our system area per capita grant. Greg McCormick had told me that this week we hope to get it. So after we receive that, we will go ahead and transfer over that $300,000 that was budgeted over to share for the fiscal year. So that you will see in those transfer, transfer from other funds in that amount. You'll see that down on that line and once we do that transfer and have that recorded. And then if you go on to the statement of net position, this is where your cash, I'll highlight some of your cash amounts. So on the unrestricted portion, that's your operating cash. That's the $1,025,554.44. That's your operating cash of those items that take, the day-to-day personnel, those costs. And so based on that balance, based on the FY 2022 expenditures, what that would take you into is approximately 6 months past April 30th. So that's 4 months into the next fiscal year. And once you get that, share receives that contribution, that's going to boost those months up even more. So you'll see that that months go up further once that contribution is made to share. And then in the reserve funds at your computer reserve line for software platform or major hardware replacement. So that's at $1,098,845.78. And then as committed funds, that's the ebook subscription amounts for ebook purchases. And that's $63,153.47 out of your total of $2,187,553.69 that you have in total of cash and cash equivalents as of April 30th. So, you know, if you have any other questions on these statements, feel free to ask. But those are the items I really just wanted to highlight on these two statements. But if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Okay. Thank okay. you.
Thanks, Rhonda. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we don't have any new business. I know I gave you a bunch of share updates, but nothing that we needed to actually discuss and make a decision on today, unless anybody has any other new business. Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to public comment. Does anybody have any comments? And do we have any announcements? Okay, our next meeting will be Wednesday, July 20th at 10 a.m., also via Zoom. I'll go ahead and turn it back to you, Miranda, if you'd like to close this out.
Yep, we'll adjourn the meeting at 10:54. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate all the discussion and feedback on the McNaughton program, too.
Thanks.
Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. You too.